This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis, and off to the theater we go today. We're in South Central LA, just above East Slauson Avenue, to be exact. We pull into a parking lot.
Just as this car is pulling up, just hold right here for me for a second, and then Perry's going to signal you guys through.
It's a drive-in theater, kind of. Like a theater in the round. And on the stage, in the middle, there are tents and trailers, people in scrubs putting Q-tips in people's noses. It's a stage set that's made to look like a COVID testing site.
Okay, thank you. Just make sure you read that a little bit so you can get a feel of the play before we get started.
We're in a pandemic, after all. Getting people together, crowded in a room to watch your art form, just ain't going to happen anytime soon. So this experimental theater company, Slauson Rec, has had to adjust. Their theater's first public performance took place here last weekend at 5711 Avalon, which, by the way, is the name of the play. KCRW's Angel Carreras checked it out.
About 24 or so cars are lined up on opposite sides of this parking lot, facing each other, looking toward the middle of this DIY drive-in panopticon. A camera person chases down characters to get live shots, all broadcast to screens and projections within the parking lot.
Roll your window halfway, please.
And just like at a drive-in movie, you can hear the actors through your car's speakers.
How you doing? I'm Bo. I'm going to be your lab technician. We're going to do a nasal swab. It may be a little uncomfortable. It might make your eyes watery. It may make you choke or gag, but it takes less than 5 seconds.
So actors in scrubs and masks walk around and start to talk to patients, and for the next 45 minutes, we're given a day in the life of COVID testers and those getting tested. Cars drive in and out of the set.
Do we just drop our DNA off in that garbage box?
Yeah.
The play's about race, class, and Karens wanting to talk to the manager. It captures the anxieties of life under COVID, using interviews with real first responders as inspiration. It's unique. It's also a unique time for the Slauson Rec Theater Company. Instead of their usual pre-pandemic digs, a rec center in South Central with a circle of 30 to 40 filled seats, they're out here performing a play in front of our car headlights. When the pandemic hit, the theater was rocked like the rest of us.
You know, he was puzzled. You had no information on nothing. You didn't know nothing. The doctors didn't know. The world didn't know nothing. So, yeah, it was just confused about a lot of things. That's it.
That's one of the theater's co-founders, Dante Johnson, also known as Bojangles. You heard him playing a COVID tester just a minute ago.
Yes, born and raised here. Yep, Pueblo Del Rio Projects is my home. You know what I'm saying?
He was working construction, and then a friend introduced him to director David Ayer. Ayer grew up in South Central, too, wrote a bunch of movies. A couple years ago, he cast Bojangles in the film Tax Collector, starring Shia LaBeouf.
You know, my thing was, I didn't want to stop working my regular 9-to-5 to chase Hollywood. And, you know, when the opportunity presented itself, you know, I thought, hey, you know, instead of questioning myself what would happen if I did, I just did it.
He clicked up with Shia and actor Bobby Soto on the set of that movie. Together, they created the Slauson Rec Theater Company. The goal, to create an arts community in South LA, one that can serve as an outlet of expression to those that don't get exposed to this kind of theater, even a launching pad to a new career for those that live in the area. And you gotta live in a nearby zip code to join, by the way.
Bringing a theater here, it's challenging because not everybody is, you know, it's not something that we're used to around the inner city here, you know what I'm saying? So we thought that if we bring something unique like that and if we can get them involved and get them to be a part of it and grow and learn, you know what I'm saying, with the process, that it'll turn out to be something, you know, way huge.
13-year-old Nyla Montoya lives in South LA. She was in this most recent play. She came across the theater in an unconventional way. Here's Nyla on how that went down.
My mom told me she had seen it on Shia LaBeouf's Hot Wing Challenge.
She's talking about Hot Ones, a wildly popular YouTube show where the host asks celebrity guests questions as they eat wings with increasingly hotter sauce. It's pretty good. Back to Nyla.
And we were like, oh, we live in South LA, why don't we go? So we started going, and it just was fun. There's not a lot of acting or, like, dancing in my area that's, like, really going to, like, lift me off and, like, teach me what I need to be taught to be able to use this in, like, my career and stuff, but like having an actual actor that made it too, and then other people that also want to help and want to give opportunity, it helps a lot.
Here's Nyla's mom, Micaela.
We really didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. We just basically just showed up on a, we didn't know anything.
Nyla and the actors here aren't doing Romeo and Juliet or Lassing Poor York. In this troupe, you're more likely to be in flesh-colored tights, twisting and contorting your body into different shapes, slapping yourself and grunting. Pure expression.
Yeah, it's very experimental. It is. That it is, you know, and it's like just jump out the airplane with no parachute, you know?
I was just like, what the f*** is they doing?
That's April Johnson. She found out about the theater when she was at the Slauson Rec Center. She heard some noises and peeked her head in.
And then, like, honestly, so when I walked in, I'm like, what is they doing? Like, and then, like, I was finna leave, and, like, Bobby ran up. He was like, hey, what's up? And he, like, just started talking to me. And I was like, oh, you know, I do gymnastics and da-da-da-da. And I didn't, like, take it serious. After I left, I was like, okay. And then he hit me up the next Saturday. He was like, where you at? I was still in bed. And he was like, oh, Shia LaBeouf is up here. I want you to meet him. So when I came, he was like, I'm Shia. And I didn't even know. I was just like, oh, like, I'm April. And then he like, you're the gymnast. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And then he like, sit down. He like, I want you to come to my show June 29th, the Sacred Spectacle. So, like, from there, I was just thugging with them.
She says it may be hard to tell, but the movements tell stories as contemporary as growing up in a rough neighborhood or even biblical, like the story of Adam and Eve. She tells me before all this, she was, quote, running around the hood. After her peek in and joining in on these movements, she's now set on a much different path.
I feel like I could, like, make it somewhere. Like, I got into, like, a music video with Roddy Ricch and Gunna. It's called Start With Me. I was, like, the centerpiece of Kid Cudi, Man on the Moon. We performed in Hollywood. And, like, I feel like I'm going somewhere being in this class, you know? Like, I could actually wake up Saturday morning and be like, oh, I'm going to class, instead of, like, damn, what I'm going to do today, you know? So I really look forward to, like, coming to class. It's dope.
Bojangles says the key to all this is to make theater seem less nose-up, highbrow, more like something you and your friends could do.
So my thing is to get the intimidation level out. I'm like, look, y'all know me. I grew up with you guys. You know what I'm saying? You know about me, you know. I grew up all around, you know, the inner city. You know what I'm saying? I done played ball, everything around here. You know, I done been into a lot of things with you guys. So, look, I'm doing it. So come join me.
We're back at the play now. A 70s rock song is starting to play. The COVID tester testee narrative turns into a dance piece as actors huddle up, form a close circle, and then they sprint to the front of your car, flailing their limbs to music. It's like an interpretive dance bomb went off and they're the shrapnel. And then a standing ovation afterwards. Or high beam flicks and seated ovation and cars honking in place of applause. It's because of COVID. The theater co-founders aren't saying exactly what's next post-pandemic, but for now, this is theater in today's world, in spite of COVID. And maybe it's theater for the future, too. They sold out their entire run to 5711 Avalon. I hope you got a ticket. For KCRW, I'm Angel Carreras.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW.
All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts.
That's Sir John Gielgud reciting William Shakespeare's famous monologue from As You Like It. Shakespeare wrote those lines about 400 years ago, but those words still ring true. Fast forward to modern times, and theater, of course, can be tricky, even when things are going well. Acting, directing, or writing for the stage probably won't get you a glamorous home in the Hollywood Hills, may not even pay the rent on your modest apartment in Echo Park. But if you love it, you're going to try and make it work. Maybe you'll supplement your income with a job teaching, perhaps, or doing other things in film or television. So what does a pandemic that has crippled most live audience events mean for people trying to make a life in the theater, particularly young people of color who often face additional barriers to entry? It has made it that much harder to get by. Julie Oney is a playwright and visiting assistant professor of English at Pepperdine University. Hey, Julie.
Hello.
Greg Daniel is the artistic director of the Lower Depth Theater, and he's adjunct lecturer at the USC School of Dramatic Arts. Greg, welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
Julie, I want to start with you. And just a simple question, how tough is it for young person of color, a young woman of color, to make a career in theater in Los Angeles. L.A. has typically not been a huge theater town, but it certainly is growing. I mean, how difficult is it even in the best of times?
Yeah, when I started thinking about some points that I wanted to share with you today, one thing that came to mind for me was I follow the Dramatists Guild Instagram account. Mm-hmm. And last week, I think, or the week before, there was a post that said, here's the average salary for a playwright. And it said something like $29,000 to $115,000. And I said, in what world is that accurate? I remember sending the post to a bunch of my friends, and we were like, where do we get in on this? Because that doesn't feel right. You know, where are their facts coming from? And a bunch of us commented on the post, and then they ended up taking it down. I was like, who are the playwrights they've surveyed for this? Was it, you know, Mamet? Like, who was it? Because that definitely doesn't really describe the reality for me or any of my, you know, playwright friends. I feel like all of us, we aren't making a living through writing plays. We're making a living through doing something else. I teach, and most of the rest of my friends do as well. So whoever is within that framework of the 29 to 115 or whatever a year is not a part of the community that I'm in right now.
Well, and never mind that, you know, they're not even talking about people of color, right? They're talking about just, right. You know, if you are, right? I mean, it's just a blanket, zone. And it's like, yes. Well, wait a second, but what about people of color? I mean, people who are really trying to break into the business and who may or may not have the same opportunities as other people.
Right. Yeah, I definitely think that it's hard enough. I mean, I'm thinking about any time that I work on a production here in LA, we always try to make sure that we have kind of a community of color that we're putting together. But these are productions that are, in many cases, they're self-produced shows that I'm working on. You know, we have very limited budgets. So I feel like most of the playwrights and, you know, theater participants of color that I know, we, instead of necessarily having the expectation that we're going to have a lot of opportunities handed to us, we're doing it on our own. So we're doing our own kind of fundraising, our own marketing and things like that. And so we kind of have to put our work out there ourselves instead of necessarily expecting that a lot of theater companies are going to embrace us. There are, you know, your handful of a few that tend to really focus on helping artists of color. But I think for the most part, we are kind of doing our own thing.
Greg, you've been at this a while. What do you tell the students that you work with coming through the theater arts program over at USC? Do you tell them, go for it? Do you tell them, you know, maybe you should go get that accounting degree or that teaching degree?
Oh, no, not at all. I would never. I remember when I was a young student, a conservatory student back in New York, and, you know, no one could defer me to my dream. I'm sure I was told a million times, don't go into it, but I still did. But actually, to be honest, I tell my students that things are changing. I mean, I don't know if you're acquainted with the We See You White Theater movement right now, but it was a document that was drawn out sometimes in April or May. And it was written by playwrights and directors and actors addressed to the white theater community. And it's having a ripple effect across Los Angeles, across the nation right now. It's called We See You White Theater. And it's sort of calling theaters out on, as Julie was saying, not just using playwrights and directors and actors of color, but who's in your boardroom, who is making the decisions. And I'm part of groups who are meeting right now. I can't tell you how many theater companies have included me, are trying to find ways, how do we include in a way that's not just demonstrative, not just performative, but how do we institute real change in the structure of our theater company? And that's encouraging. And that's what I also relate to my theater students, because I see it. Plus, I'm a member of a group called ATLA, Alternative Theater LA, about 64 theater companies across Los Angeles, started getting together in the middle of March when theater shut down to talk about, well, how do we stay alive? And this is companies of color and other companies. And we've been meeting every Tuesday, 10 o'clock, for months now, supporting each other, sharing resources. It just resulted in an online festival for the last three weekends. 34 of the 64 companies participated, showing 10 minutes of something that typifies or represents their theater company. So there's tremendous change. There's tremendous change going on, and I happily report that to the students. Yes, it's going to be rough. It's always been rough, especially for BIPOC people. But the fact that theaters and we're in a movement now because of the Black Lives Movement that is really asking theaters, what have you done? How have you made? I know you've hired a director or two, and you've got a playwright in your season. You may have a designer, but what have you done to do institutional change? So I'm happy to sort of share that with my students because I want them to be aware they're coming into a time that's going to be very different than the time I started working in.
Well, a different time for sure going forward, but here we are in the middle of a pandemic, right? And I Absolutely. Wonder, how does that affect how many people, you know, the group of people, the people who are getting into this business?
Well, again, you know, it's always been tough. Right now, there's sort of jurisdictional war going on between Equity and SAG. I don't know if you've heard about this or not, but a lot of theaters have taken to online presence now. So theaters are using actors. They are using actors on Zoom and different platforms. However, how much are you going to pay those actors? SAG does have a deferred payment agreement. So it is possible, but I mean, it's becoming a jurisdictional fight now because actors want to work. And when a theater company comes to you and even says on Zoom, we're going to start doing this work out there, it's just, how are the unions now, in terms of my case, how are the unions going to react and make sure that those actors who are working on Zoom and StreamYard and OBS formats, how are they going to be compensated fairly? But there is a presence. There is an online presence that most theater companies are finding it essential to create so they can stay alive during this pandemic time.
Julie, are you saying the same thing?
Yeah, I definitely think that there's clearly an online presence going on right now, but I think there's so many challenges with the way that we're living right now that kind of affect the way that comes out. So, for example, the fact that so many people are losing their jobs is affecting people in their ability to create art. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. In order to thinking about, you know, actor friends I have, playwright friends and things like that, who typically are creating art in addition to having, you know, some sort of full-time job. If suddenly you don't have work, in theory, it seems like, oh, now you have all the time in the world to create art. But not having a stable, you know, financial situation can really hinder somebody's ability to get involved with, you know, developing a show or a character, things like that. So I feel like there are some opportunities, but because this is sort of just a supplemental income for most people, it's really hard in many cases to get into that sort of mindset, right? I mean, a friend of mine who's a fellow playwright of color is an adjunct professor and lost her classes basically because there was lower enrollment, and she ended up having to move into a shelter because she couldn't pay her rent anymore. So she's not really in a space right now where she's feeling inspired for doing something creative like writing a show, because she's just kind of struggling trying to get by and get back into, you know, a living situation that's preferable. So I think that there are opportunities, but because we have so much else going on that we're dealing with, it just makes it more of a challenge to kind of embrace those.
So what is the answer, Julie? Is there an answer for this?
That's a tough question.
I know. I mean, how do you get people inspired? Yeah. I mean, the inspiration's got to be there, but if you're unable, right. I mean, if it's going to land you in a shelter because you can't pay the rent, right. Then what do you do?
Yeah, I think, you know, I agree with what Greg said, that I think that there's definitely a lot of initiatives that are going on, and kind of, you know, the interesting thing that happened was there ended up being this sort of overlap between the chaos of the pandemic and the whole Black Lives Matter, you know, movement. And something that's happened that I've noticed is that a lot of, you know, companies are doing festivals and events and things like that that are specifically focused on, you know, racial justice and things like that. And so I do think that something good that has happened is that through the, you know, world of Zoom theater, there have been some kind of really interesting, you know, productions or projects that have happened. But I think a lot of these, because companies are losing a lot of their funding, unfortunately, don't result in a big, you know, paycheck for the artists of color who are being asked to participate. So I feel like an answer is, I think art should be definitely kind of dealing with the specifics of this current moment. But as far as how we deal with the lack of, you know, finance, I mean, I definitely think that the answer obviously is more arts funding, but you know, where is that going to come from is the question. And I definitely don't have a specific answer to that.
Greg, I mean, what do you think needs to happen? Obviously, funding is a big deal.
Well, I see what is happening. And I mean, there was never money in theater. I mean, not to be a naysayer, right. But there was never money in theater anyway. At right. its best, you're making $800,000 a week. I mean, Broadway was the largest with a production contract, but there was never money in theater. Most of us used television and film to supplement our theater habit, is what I call. But the good news, again, is that you know it's coming back. I mean, just about a few months ago, I actually was cast in a film that we worked for, well, was it 5 or 6 weeks? And it had, you know, COVID procedures and protocols. Television shows are beginning to come back. I mean, theater's not coming back for a while. That's going to be online for a while. It just is. I think Taper just announced they're not even going to try and do something till May, June, July. However, film and television is slowly and gradually meeting agreements with SAG to come back and start shows shooting again. All around the country, shows are shooting again. And like I said, I did a film about a few months ago. So again, it was always television and film money anyway that was sort of keeping us going. So hang in there. They are, I mean, studios want to get back. They're desperate to get back. And they're reaching all these really stringent and terrific severe protocols with our unions to get shooting again. So again, it's a mercurial time, but I do see movement and growth in that. When we were shut down, there was nothing going on. But now that I do see television and film and projects like that getting the green light and going ahead and shooting. And that's where the money always was in terms of being able to support yourself as a performer.
Greg Daniel, Artistic Director over at the Lower Depth Theater. Greg and Julie Oney, playwright and visiting assistant professor of English at Pepperdine. Thanks to you both.
Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, Steve.
Well, you just heard Julie and Greg say virtual theater isn't going anywhere for a while, given the restrictions on audience gathering. And that has real-world consequences for the theaters themselves. I'm talking about the companies, the ensembles, the shows, the spaces. Our friend Anthony Burns usually hosts Opening the Curtain on KCRW, not doing it lately because of, well, the virtual theater aspect of all of this. He's a longtime theater critic, though, here in LA, and he's with us right now. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, Steve.
Just a moment ago, Greg and Julie discussed how hard it is for people of color, especially young people of color, to make it in theater. What do you think about what they said?
Well, I mean, I think you hear in both Greg and Julie, who are, you know, two incredible artists here in Los Angeles, the challenge, right? You heard Julie talk about how they're all, you know, even in the best of times, they're doing other things to get by. And I think this is a really, really challenging and really, really unprecedented moment in the theater. I mean, like, we've never had a moment when our theaters have been closed for this long. So it's this really challenging moment where we're both seeing tremendous difficulty and a real sense of uncertainty about what comes next. But there's also this possibility of what of coming back and creating something better and something new.
There's a lot going on. They're having to supplement, obviously, their income or lack thereof with those other jobs, with the teaching jobs and obviously taking other positions in television and film. And I wonder, you know, the whole ecosystem, I mean, can it survive, you know, writ large? I mean, is it going to be okay? Or is it like, at some point, are we going to say, well, no more theater?
Well, I mean, look, Los Angeles is we've talked about it a bunch of times in the past. It's a really interesting theater town. And I take you to point in that earlier interview. There is a lot of great theater in Los Angeles. So we're going to correct that slowly, Steve, one interview at a time. We are a theater town.
Okay. All right.
But,
that's
you know,
good,
when,
good.
When we look at our theaters, right, you can see at the top Center Theater Group, you know, one of the largest Lort theaters in the country, just laid off half of its staff, you know, back in August. So you can see the financial hit there. Now, what's interesting is in some ways we might be better positioned as a city. You know, we're going to take a hit at the top. We're going to take a really big hit at the middle, which is a place that we've always struggled in Los Angeles. But if you have the smaller theater companies, especially ones that don't have to pay a lease, you know, in a sense, they might be able to hibernate right now, right? And you heard Greg talk about how some of these theater companies are using this time to get together and, you know, do stuff where they're actually coming together, and they just put on a festival these last 3 weeks and they're talking about next steps. So that piece is exciting and that piece is interesting, right? And there's potential there, especially if we could come back with a more diverse theater. And you heard Greg talk about how he's getting included in more conversations. That's a good thing. And what I'm most concerned about is the folks who, you know, were maybe cobbling it together with an acting gig over here and a teaching gig over there, and maybe they taught at a studio or something or what have you, they were never making a ton of money. And in this moment, is this a moment where those folks who, you know, you joked about the accounting degree with Greg, is this the moment where some folks who really should stay in the field decide, I got to pay rent instead? And then do we lose a generation of artists, especially do we lose a generation of artists of color in a moment where clearly we need more representation, right? And also, as we say, talk about this economically, right, we're going to have a big ecosystem hit. And are people going to put their money behind arts philanthropy? I think they should, because I think it's part of what makes our city livable and what makes, you know, our culture richer. But recognize if we lose these folks, we're not just losing plays. We're losing the folks who are teaching your kids. We're losing folks in the classroom. We're losing folks who, you know, really make our city a more vibrant and livable place. So it's a big deal.
I don't want to end the interview and this show on this down note, right? Like some places won't survive and all that. So what I'd like from you, Anthony, is what are some upcoming shows, those virtual shows that you talk about, that you're most looking forward to?
Yeah. So here's some stuff. You know, Zoom theater is really challenging. Some folks are figuring
it
out.
Is.
You know, the Geffen and others. What's interesting is some of the stuff that has really taken off is magic online, which is interesting to think about why that's working. So there's some of that that's out there. Two pieces that I'm really excited about is, you know, Luis Alfaro, a local poet and playwright, his Greek trilogy of Electricidad, Oedipus El Rey, and Mojada, stuff that all played at theaters around town, and in particular the Getty. They're doing a reading of that at Center Theater Group. And to be able to see those plays, even virtually back to back, I think is really, really meaningful. And I encourage everyone to make time for that. And then a personal favorite in a totally different way, and this is going all the way across, you know, all the way back to Shakespeare, right, is at UCLA a couple of years ago brought out Forest Entertainment, this UK company, for this tabletop Shakespeare, The Complete Works. And basically, imagine you were at a pub and you said, hey, I never really understood what the hell was going on in King Lear. And somebody sat down across from you at a table and used, you know, just beer bottles and the salt shaker and just told you the story of each of Shakespeare's plays in under an hour. And because it's one person at a tabletop, it's actually really sort of, it's conducive to kind of a Zoom intimate piece. And they're doing those through November 15th. And they're kind of, they're at a weird time because they're live at noon each day, but you can watch them anytime. And they're kind of amazing. So I'd go with something local and something really distant. And I, you know, get excited about when we finally do, like, start planning about what theaters you don't know about in LA that once we get out of this mess, you're going to go check out and you're going to support this economy.
Anthony Burns, who hosts Opening the Curtain on KCRW. Anthony, as always, nice to have you on. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
It's nice to end on a higher note, by the way, because sometimes the news and reality can be a bit overwhelming. I know. Believe me, I know. But here's some good stuff to talk about. The radio connection that you and I make on the regular with our show, Greater LA, the taste-making music with Ann Litt, Morning Becomes Eclectic, the unique sounds of Henry Rollins, Michael Silverblatt. Can you imagine a staff party with those two, right? Elvis Mitchell, Kim Masters, Madeline Brand, Cherry Glazer. Think of the names that you trust at KCRW. We give you the power of information and culture and entertainment. You give us power in numbers, because when we all get together, give a little, it turns into a lot. And you can do your part to support the radio station by going to kcrw.com/give. Donate right now. You'll be counted toward our goal of 200 pledges today. And if we make it, we're going to unlock a special $10,000 challenge grant from KCRW champions Betty Bennett and Bob Clearmountain. So thank you for your support of public radio. A reminder, coming up in just a few minutes, at 7 o'clock tonight, switch on over to Zoom. We'd love to see you there because we have a special program. It's called Greater LA Presents. What else is on the ballot, California? I'll be hosting with some experts online to talk more about the ballot measures, the propositions, the measures, and the people on the ballot. A very important election, obviously. 2 weeks from tomorrow is Election Day. Millions have already voted in California, but maybe you haven't. Maybe you want more information on those props or on those people who are on the ballot. We're going to try and give you as much information in an hour as we can on Zoom. There's more information at kcrw.com, so check that out. And we'd love to see you on Zoom in just a few minutes, so stick around for that. That is going to do it for us today. Jenna Cagle, Sonia Geis, PJ Shahamit, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on the show. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thanks for your ears tonight. Have a good night.